Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Yes, indeed. John Downing, very good morning to you, and thanks very much for talking to us on the programme this morning, this week. And we're going to start, John, with the UK. Just have a listen to this.
Everyone knows that politics isn't working. Everyone can feel that the country isn't where it should be. Tonight could, just could, be the turning point. From here on, I will give everything I have got to make it so, to ensure the name Makerfield is forever synonymous with bringing about the change this country needs. Bringing back something we've lost, hope. Hope for the future. It will never be a stepping stone to me, but instead will be my touchstone. A Makerfield test at the heart of British politics will ensure the places Westminster has neglected will now get fairness.
There you go, John. That's the man of the moment in British politics, Andy Burnham, winning the by-election in Makerfield and possibly launching a challenge against Keir Starmer for Labour, beating off Reform and Restore and all the others, the Conservatives as well, in that by-election. The King in the North, they call him.
Yeah, absolutely. A stunning victory. Polls and other kind of measures around such a thing saw the thing as being closer, but especially Reform UK's candidate, Councillor Robert Kenyon. Interesting, one of the slogans was, basically the voters in Makerfield, close to Wigan, were basically picking a prime minister. So one among the various slogans was, who do you want to represent Makerfield? A plumber, which is Councillor Robert Kenyon's of Reform's day job, or the prime minister, Andy Burnham, because one way or another, sooner rather than later, he's going to oust Keir Starmer, a good friend of Ireland, and I think a thoroughly decent individual. But as you say, Andy Burnham, King of the North, in he'll go, with extraordinary popularity, extraordinary belief in him, and you'd wonder, you know, how long will that last in the current climate of things?
Yeah, and how damaging would it be? There's some suggestion out there this morning from within Labour that there won't be a contest, or there might not be a contest, because it would be too damaging in the context of the threats that they face. Number one, economically try and sort out the country. Number two, fight off the likes of Reform, who are winning all around them. So how is that one going to go, do you think? Or do you think Burnham will just go for broke now, do a challenge, take over, and then bring the change that he wants to both Labour and Britain?
I think he's in a position to mount a challenge if needs be, but I think there will be enormous pressure for all kinds of reasons on Keir Starmer to more or less to bow out gracefully and take as much cred with him as he can as he goes. I don't expect there'll be much. One thing that I keep picking up in all the listening and reading that I've been doing on this is that not much will happen this weekend. Andy Burnham will, to great acclaim, land at Westminster on Monday, and it will kick off from there. There's an awful lot coming up here. There's a number of things really have kicked in. I mean, it was a strange premise for an election. It was to say, vote for the Labour candidate to get rid of the Labour leader. Viewed from a just exclusively Irish standpoint, it is very good news for the Dublin government. It is very good for the EU more generally that that Reform UK didn't. In fact, they were pretty soundly beaten, as was its breakaway group, which really wasn't responsible for the there's a sort of provisional Reform UK party at the moment as well. They came in third place, but a poor third. Yeah. It's good news that Britain can continue to repair its relationships with the European Union. That's certainly good news for Ireland. Reform also have all sorts of strange, basically English nationalist ideas, which I think would have caused an awful lot of problems for Dublin in trying to maintain equilibrium in cross-border links. So that's very good news as well. I think all the signs are that that Andy Burnham will continue to be a friend of Ireland, will continue to develop practical, good relations with the European Union. So for now, that's a very good outcome.
Yeah, and that's important, John, in the context, I'd imagine, of what's happening in the north with regards to immigration issues or border, who crosses that, whether it's a hard border or not. Those things starting to creep into the conversation again. So important that we have somebody that you can rely on or can at least work with on those issues.
And on a practical level, you know, while he paid tribute to the to try to basically get the Mick vote, on this one and elsewhere, he frequently cited the Irish immigrant community in the north of England and their contribution. He also has spoken a bit about his Irish ancestry, which goes back a bit, and it's not huge. But more important than all of that, in the job he's now exiting as mayor of Greater Manchester, he was several times on trade missions to Dublin, and he was very, very conscious of north of England, east coast of Ireland trade links. And I think that that is probably most valuable of all.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay, John, the short-term letting situation came up in both the Dáil and kind of related to a housing committee call as well in terms of how you get more people into homes, how you get more people renting homes. We had Minister Peter Burke responding to Michael Healy-Ray. It's kind of concerning some details that he talked to Cabinet about in terms of how this is going to work. This is long-delayed legislation, a long-delayed promise to clamp down on the too many holiday homes the government says we have. We need more long-term rental. It's all happening. The register is happening in December. And we got some clarity on the planning situation. If you've been doing it for 7 years, you'll be all right, is what they're saying.
Yes, basically. And some people may come in under that 7-year threshold and may find that the planning, they may find they'll have to abandon Airbnb because new planning regulations will be a stretch for them. As far as I understand it, basically, this concerns Tralee in Kerry rather than any of the other. Killarney gets out under the wire. We've described this before as a classic Kerry dilemma because it's, basically you want to cater for visitors, but equally you want to have available renting accommodation for catering workers and tourism workers. Yeah. So, you know, there's a deliberate clash here. But there's another issue which kind of looms in the background, which is planning, the processing of planning applications is already, you know, pretty lumbering in many jurisdictions, many local authority areas. This will be another burden on planning, on the planners.
Did Peter Burke speak to that, though, John, when he said there's going to be a simplified administrative process when it comes to that? They're at least conscious that there will be an issue here, so they're going to try and make it much easier for planners to deal with the glut of applications they'll probably get.
Yes, and I think, you know, it is to be hoped that we can make a better stab at ordering our affairs instead of, you know, every other day you pick up a paper and you find there's another botch in terms of doing what many of us would feel are relatively simple administrative tasks. And yes, I will say that Peter Burke, I've always found him to be a practical man, you know, who tries to find solutions. So, yes, that is to be hoped.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay, John, alongside that then, there are other issues that the government are trying to tackle on local authority housing. Have a little listen to this.
That we don't tolerate widespread dereliction across this country at a time when the social contract is really stretched for young people, wondering will they be able to buy a home. It's not acceptable that so many homes and so many potential homes are derelict. Government will act, and I look forward to legislating for this in the finance bill. You'll also see progress between both Minister Brown and Minister Burke in terms of short-term lets. Again, putting a new structure in place where you got to call it. Are you a short-term let? Are you a long-term let? Because we need clarity in relation to this, particularly in our larger towns and cities. So it was actually RTE that was very critical of this. It was very good journalism in RTE. RTE Investigates that I watched very closely and was aghast at the responses from some local authorities. Aghast. This is a small country with a population around the size of Manchester. And some local authorities are doing a very, very, very good job operating under the same rules, collecting the derelict sites levy and tackling dereliction. And some are appalling at it. Appalling. And it's my job as a government leader to make sure that the policies of the government and the wishes of the people are enforced without fear or favour in an equal manner right across the country.
Yeah, there you go. Aghast. Appalled, John, Simon Harris is at the local authorities and their lack of ability to collect this derelict site tax and tackle this problem that affects the housing stock that we have. The local authorities organisation, one of the representative organisations, coming out this week saying, how very dare you? Is this the age-old fashioned manner of a government saying it's the local authorities' fault? The local authorities turning around saying, no, no, it's the fellas up in Dublin who are causing all the problems.
Yeah, this is another example of a game of pass the parcel. I mean, every now and again, as the problems and the pressure builds on various housing issues on the housing department and the cabinet generally, somebody turns around and says, "Do you know what? The councils are not doing what they're supposed to do. They're not, building, or they're not." And in this very specific one, levies on derelict property. Now, there are some fabulous grants for people to renovate houses.
Yeah. And they've been increased even in the last couple of weeks, John, as well. They've been upped again to try and get more people developing and redeveloping.
Yes, Ben. And meanwhile, you only have to take a walk. I'm sure you take a walk around Tralee. Take a walk around, you know, your average town, and you'll see a very large level of dereliction. There is this route. The Taoiseach, Minister for Finance, was quite hard-hitting in what he said about local authorities. Some of them are particularly good, but some of them stand out bad. I mean, Cavan, Donegal, Dublin, Fingal, Galway City and County, Leitrim, Longford, Monaghan, Tipperary, they collected no, 11 of 31 local authority areas actually collected no levies the last year that was cited, which was 2024. And there is talk, it hasn't yet come to fruition, about switching the collection of this levy to the revenue commissioners from the local authorities in the same way as they did with the local property tax. And that does
does that change everything, John? The harp on the letter, does that concentrate the minds out there, and will they be much tougher than the local authorities?
I think it does, in the sense that, you know, to do all sorts of things, you need tax clearance. So if you're not, up to speed with your derelict property levy, among other things, you wouldn't get tax clearance. So that definitely is out there. It certainly happened the local property tax was left in its early years, around about 2010, 2011, was left with the local authorities, and that the revenue take intake was very poor. But it did certainly visibly change things when revenue were handed that one. So, as you
and
say,
if you look, John, if you look at the revelation from this as well, and Kerry County Council, they had to remove all 64 properties from its register and write off 655,000 unpaid levies, mainly due to clerical errors. Like, the revenue won't be at that, obviously.
Well,
that's so Simon Harris right in what he's saying?
You know, that is the legend and the practice, I suppose, for many of us who've had our uphill and down dale with revenue over the years, you know. There would at first glance anyway seem to be quite a lot of sense. I mean, certainly something has to happen with derelict property. Somebody has to, grasp that nettle. There's far too much of it at a time of housing crisis.
Yeah, certainly is. Okay, John, we'll see where that one goes, that row and other things. The issue of abortion was before Leinster House this week. We'll talk about that and other things after we take these.
Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
No, John, 86-71 was the tail of the tape on the Sinn Féin Private Members Bill, sponsored by David Cullinan, health spokesperson, to do away and remove the 3-day waiting limit for women who are seeking to have an abortion prior to the 12-week limit under the legislation. This has brought back into sharp focus the abortion divide, can I call it that, in Leinster House. What do you make of it all? Micheál Martin and Simon Harris and several leaders of the parties in government voting with Sinn Féin on this one. And then we had on the other side of it the story of all the backbenchers of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil going against their leaders, perhaps maybe reflecting more of a rural-urban divide. Or how did you see this one playing out this week?
Well, it is, I suppose, rural-urban, or it's kind of East Coast versus West Coast, because you'd count numbers on the West Coast who actually voted in favour of this. But it was interesting from a Kerry point of view, the Healy Ray brothers, Fianna Fáil's Michael Cahill and Minister Norma Foley all voted against. It remains a very divisive issue and a very difficult issue, and maybe it should be because it is very fundamental. What was encouraging this week was the tone of the debate was respectful and moderate, and that is very helpful. We are eventually getting there, and there is credit to David Cullinan of Sinn Féin, who was very conciliatory and courteous and measured in his approach. He's Waterford Sinn Féin TD and health spokesperson. He's often seen as a bit of a political bruiser, and he was anything but this week. The move at issue is moves to end a 3-day mandatory waiting time. Basically, a woman, you know, comes and signals that she wants to have a termination of pregnancy, and then the next step is, well, wait 3 days, reflect maybe
have
another bit back and see us. Yeah, and the argument against that is that the procedure has to be done with inside a 12-week limit. Sometimes people in very difficult circumstances, under all kinds of duress and in all kinds of difficulty, are right up against that deadline. And in practice, the outcome may be that an abortion is denied, and or the person involved has to travel outside the jurisdiction. So it is a very difficult one. For example, Norma Foley, in her explanation of why she was going to vote no, sort of typified some of the words of the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, her own party, Fianna Fáil, of course, TDs, when they said, look, in 2018, when the Eighth Amendment, the teetotal ban on abortion, was repealed in a referendum. This idea was basically sold to people. People who were sceptical about it were sold on various reassurances, and the three-day ban, the three-day wait time was one of those. So quite interesting.
And do they have a point,
really,
John? The opponents to abortion, who were, some of them were warning at the time, because it was about more than just that. It was about giving power to the Oireachtas to make these changes without having to go back to the people. The people on the no side who lost. But at the same time, are they now saying, and are they right to say, look, this is what we were warning about. The thin end of the wedge, changes will be made, it'll be taken away from the people in terms of what a vital issue they feel it is, in terms of the life of an unborn baby. And here we have the first pillar falling, and it'll get worse from here, from their point of view. Do they have a point?
Yeah, I mean, they have that argument. I mean, the counter argument to that is, look, going way back to Edmund Burke, and going way back to the whole 18th century, parliamentarians are picked to order our affairs, and if we really disagree with them, well, then we pick another one. So, I mean, we could be going through this on a lot of issues. I mean, the other counter argument is that an abortion ban really should never have been in the Constitution to begin with. And I think the history of going from pretty much 40 years before we kind of got ourselves out of that halt, you know, speaks to that argument. But I will say, I mean, it is divisive. It is a deeply sensitive issue. And, you know, other people were looking at the number of men who are quite vocal and quite strident in their views on this, whereas essentially the women, and particularly women who are left to cope with this on their own, really are the voices that need to be heard more. But we could be here forever on this one, Jerry, going round in
circles.
That's
a fair point, John.
I think the 3-day wait period probably will be removed from that legislation, but it's to go back in now for committee scrutiny, and we'll be talking about this again in the autumn. But happened this week showed that how teetotally sensitive the issue remains, and how potentially divisive.
Yeah, indeed. John, listen, we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. Thanks a million for talking to us and call from the Dáil for this week. That's John Downing of the Irish Independent. If you have a view on what he had to say about the political week, then get in touch with us on the programme.